TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show. This is podcast number 107, and I am Libby, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Susie from Sherman Oaks.
Allison from Tarzana.
Amy from Encino.
All right, and this week in the news, I don't really have much news because everything's about the pilots and which pilots are being shot, and nothing's been decided yet. So there'll be news in a couple weeks about which pilots got picked up, but that is not now. But Allison has some news.
Well, my news is basically just about returning shows. We have on Showtime both Nurse Jackie, yay, and The Borgias, which Woo-hoo. Are both fantastic shows, and I highly encourage seeing them. Yes.
All right. So, talking of returning shows, let's get to it, which is the return of season 2 of Game of Thrones,
yay.
Episode 1. And just to do a survey in the room, who has read the books? Show of hands.
I'm raising my hand.
I've read book 1.
So no book 2 then?
No, not yet.
Okay, I've mostly done book 2. So okay. I've read as far as the first. Yeah,
okay,
I've read almost to the end, but okay. So that's, I wanted to get the contrast between those who have read and who have not. So Allison, mm-hmm. since you have not read the book, what did you think of the first episode?
Okay, well, actually, I deliberately wanted to stay away from book 1 because I like surprises. I like, you know, watching it and being surprised. So I will say I loved the opening episode, but I was a little bit, you know, confused when they were introducing the new characters. So it's like I did have that little bit of you know, what were they? When they were doing the beach scene, introducing Stannis and his crew. By the time they got into the interior scene and they were doing that bit at the table, it was like, oh, okay, I know what's going on now. So I was fine with that, and I got some idea of who they were at that point and what was going on. The rest of the episode was fantastic. It was like visiting old friends, and I really got back into it as soon as we were back in King's Landing and watching Joffrey.
Yeah.
and typically psychotic, and having Tyrion immediately come back to interact with everyone, I just was right there and thought that the interactions were fantastic. And I thought there were, you know, there's a little bit of jumping around from character to character, and I've read reviews where people have had a problem with that. But for me, that was not a problem because I understand we're dealing with a really big board with a lot of pieces scattered over it. And I felt like I understand how everyone is connected. And I thought they made that very clear. And I trust the author to bring everyone together at the end. I saw all the connections and I saw how they interrelate. So I thought it was a brilliant episode and I loved watching it.
Well, what I was going to say, the best line ever is Tyrion talking to his sister. And he's just like, yeah, he's like, your best trait is you love your kids and your cheekbones. Like, that was yeah. really
good. Your best qualities.
Yeah. Yes.
Another line that I loved from the same scene was, you know, how does it feel to be the disappointing child?
Oh, right. Yeah. He's like, you had like... three Starks. You took one's head and you lost another one. Like, that was so good.
Well, I know since you said, Libya, that you had started reading the book, and I'm about halfway through, a little bit more than halfway through the second one, because just like with the first series, I didn't read the book first. I just watched the series, and I was amazed at how fluid it was, how all the pieces connected, how I, again, like Allison said, you know, how everything will probably connect at some point. So for this one, I thought, oh, I want to read that. And then I read the book after the series. So I was like, oh my God, I envisioned everyone. It was perfect. They cast it beautifully. You know, I was like, yes, these characters are now alive in my head with the images from the series in the book.
Right.
And then I got to really, really understand really who people were and how they were connected, because you do miss a lot of that, I think,
just watching the series. Yeah.
So a lot of that confusion just, of course, was gone by nature of reading the book. So for the second series, I said, I'm going to read the book first, or at least stay ahead of it, which I've been doing, and try and be able to pattern out who's who in advance. So when we got to that beach scene at the very first cut, you know, that is what opened the book. You know, you get this scene of Stannis and his, you know, he's getting his fiery sword. And you're introduced to, what's her name? Starts with an M.
I call her the Lady in Red or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, well, they call her that too, but like more, not Morgana, but you know, it starts with an M, I think.
I forgot.
But anyway, or Marcella, I think it's Marcella. So no, that's the daughter. So it's M, Lady in Red. So we get introduced to her, and honestly, and this is the weird thing, in the book, while they were going through that whole thing, because it was jumping, it was Davos's point of view,
mm-hmm.
I was actually a little confused in the book with that chapter, whereas I think the TV show actually really cut it to the elements of it. And I thought, well, that's actually kind of helpful, because if they went by the book on that, it would probably be a little confusing. But what I think is interesting is even for this very first... this first episode, they've gotten very far ahead in some of the stories. Like if you know, like John's story, like mm-hmm. boom, they're
they
already
just,
there.
Jump.
Bam, they're there.
Yeah, they jump.
Like at what's his, you know, at the guy's house and with his wives and daughters who are his daughters. And
which is ew.
Very ew.
Yeah.
And
there
so,
was a lot of ew.
There was a lot of
ew.
Well, especially yeah. when they started dumping children in the lake and they were taking
yes.
babies
yeah.
and killing them
and
everything.
And even that was. You know, it's like, okay, that was a different scene than what I expected for them to
do. Well, in the book, that happens. The
yeah.
queen basically, because
yeah.
everybody's talking about how Joffrey is
and
not really the king's
illegitimate
kid, and
yeah.
it's not really, so she didn't want somebody to start raise a banner around one of the illegitimate children
yeah,
of the king.
Yep.
So she just goes on a rampage and just kills them all.
All the whorehouses everywhere and kill all the kids.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting. But the advances that they made this particular one, even in the first episode, shows me right away that they're not going with the original pacing of the book, which they did in the first series. So that's
well,
why
not really. In the first series, they skipped about 100 pages.
They did, but they didn't. But they skipped everything kind of by 100 pages. Like, they didn't bring things forward as much as they did
in
this.
Oh, okay.
They really did pace it out very, very well. And I say that again because I had read the book after.
Well, but they just... Anyway.
Yeah, so anyway, I thought that was great. So I'm interested to see where we're going with this. And I know Peter mentioned in his note that, you know, in his email that he thought it was... you know, kind of where is this going kind of thing. Well, it's four huge books. So if you're expecting any kind of closure within the next 2 years, give that up.
Yeah, it's
you
not going to
so
happen.
Yeah, so when I hear people saying that, they're like, well, what happened? Nothing's happening. Yeah, read the books. Put in 2,000 pages.
Yeah, you're not going to be told everything all at once.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to be patient.
Exactly.
This is going to be a long, long ride.
Yeah.
But I think one thing that was told a lot about you know how good the episode was by the time we actually got to the last moment of the episode, you know, when Arya is riding off on that cart and it suddenly goes to black and we're seeing the credits go up, I watched it, you know, at a party where there was a lot of people, and those credits suddenly came up and the lot of us in the room suddenly went what?
Like, we want more.
Like, where'd the hour go?
Oh,
we had no idea of the passage of time. We were so engrossed in what was going on, and that says a lot of how well they constructed the episode and mm-hmm. how beautifully they paced it.
Right.
So I think it was an excellent episode.
Yeah.
Thumbs up for me.
Next up, we're going to talk about Once Upon a Time. And this was the episode where they do the whole flashback. So we learn about the Queen as a young girl and Mary Margaret as a tiny girl. Who, by the way, casting was like amazing. I was like, is that her real daughter? Like,
I was astonished.
That kid looks so much like her. Oh my God, that was really good casting. But I've actually seen that kid actor before. But anyway... so there was that storyline in the past, and then the present we had,
I think they were just following up on her, you know, being charged with her murder.
Right. Oh, and then they did the big reveal at the end. Right.
Right.
Oh, because you find out in the present that it's actually a plan between the Evil Queen and Mr. Goal actually working together to get her. And then Mr. Goal was like, you know what? Screw this. And he totally double crosses the queen and he's just like, whatever. But the thing is when they do the flashback's all pretty good, because you actually see what the Evil Queen was like before she was an Evil Queen, and you find out her mother was an eviler queen. And but it begs the question of how did she get her mother's powers, and she had no powers at the beginning. And you see her being all nice and everything, but I have to say is when they actually tell you the whole story and you understand why she's actually trying to kill Mary Margaret, I was like, you know what, that's kind of petty.
It's like, very petty.
That was like my the whole. When you get through the whole thing, I was like,
"That was it."
Wow. I was like, "That's it. That's pretty petty." For you to spend your entire life trying to get revenge on someone, and you find out it was because a little girl of about 8 or 9 years old can't keep a secret.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, she's nine. Yeah. Of course, she can't keep a secret.
I was kind of expecting the kid to run off and do it out of spite, because then at least there'd be something. But when you find out that she did it because she was tricked by her evil mother into giving the secret away, I mean, that makes it even worse, because the kid is really blameless.
Yeah.
I mean, the one she should be angry at is her own mother.
Right. Her mother kills the guy. Her mother tricked the little girl into telling her what she wanted. And so the evil queen's entire plot is, I must kill the little girl who gave away my secret. I'm like,
talk about killing the messenger.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. And then Mary Margaret was like, and then the adult Mary Margaret was crying, because she's like, I don't understand why you hate me so much. And what's even worse is Mary Margaret doesn't even have her memories, so she really doesn't know why the evil queen hates her.
I mean, truly, there's no satisfaction in taking revenge on someone who doesn't even know why you're taking revenge on.
Right.
Unless you're really evil.
So, I mean, I liked the flashback as far as the information, but it's just when it all gets laid out at the end, I was like, wow, she's just pretty. So, all I want to know is, if she's just spending all this energy trying to kill Mary Margaret, she must have taken her revenge on her mom. I want to at least see that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I'm sure she did.
She got the powers for her originally was so that she could take revenge on her mother first.
Right.
So, I'm a little surprised it took this long to find out why she wanted to kill Mary Margaret.
Well, I mean, it's a season. You gotta spread stuff out, so I get that. I'm not really mad about that, but I just...
I'm not mad about it. I'm just like, okay.
It does seem silly.
I wish they'd come up with a better reason.
Yeah, it's true.
Because this was just extremely petty and stupid.
I don't know if it's stupid, but it's really petty. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, her boyfriend died. And he was killed, and because he loved her. So I get why she's upset. I'm not saying that's a bad reason to be upset. I'm just saying that the object of your ire is like an 8-year-old. I think that's silly.
But they just should have given her a more sensible reason to do it. I mean, they portrayed her as originally being a reasonable person.
True.
So if unless they're going to suggest that she's gone completely insane, which she didn't seem to have been, just vengeful, then they need to come up with more sensible reason for her to be angry at the kid. And they, as far as I was concerned, they just didn't.
I agree. All right, let's wrap that up. It was a good episode, silliness at the end, but overall I think it's still worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so next up, let's talk about the season finale of House of Lies, which we haven't talked about that in a couple weeks, maybe. Or maybe we talked about it last week. Yes, we did talk about it last week.
We covered it, yes.
Yes. So the season finale was pretty much as good as advertised, I think. Except that I felt like false advertisement when they showed him doing the whole gun thing in the previews. Like, I expected a little more than just a dream. So, yeah. So I was a little disappointed by that part.
I didn't think it was actually going to open fire, but I guess I was expecting that to be somewhere near the end. And when it turned out to be, you know, just a dream thing at the beginning, I was like, huh. Oh, no wonder they didn't mind showing it.
Right. Yeah, it didn't have much. But I'm not surprised that Marty knew what Kristen Bell's character was doing the whole time. Like he said, his skill is that he can read people. And the fact that he could tell that she was ashamed of herself for sleeping with the Rainmaker makes sense. That totally makes sense to me. And every time he suggested this plot, he kept looking at her very obviously. And she's like, stop looking at me. So usually I don't like when they do the whole time thing where you go flash forward, flash back in time. But this one, it didn't really bother me because they did it a couple of times. Like, you spent half the story in the past and half the story in the future, and they went back and forth. So that was actually worked versus doing the whole show you something excited at the beginning and then 36 hours earlier. I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, I think, is the way they did it worked for me.
Because it was narrative that was important.
Well, I think because they were constantly building up to the same point.
Exactly. Right.
You know, they were at the party. Right. So.
And then we end at the party, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Marty basically by the end of the season has screwed up everything. He's fixed his career, but screwed up everything else in his life.
Yeah. I mean, his personal life is a complete mess.
Right. But I like the show, so definitely going to watch it next season because I want to see, especially they left us hanging with the whole will they or won't they.
His personal life could be getting interesting from the looks of it. I don't know.
Yeah, because Kristen Bell broke up with her fiance, which we all knew she should. Well, first of all, the fact that she didn't tell any of her friends that she was engaged and never introduced him to anybody lets you know that she really didn't intend to marry him.
Yeah. Yeah, so. No, she was just doing this sort of out of some weird sense of bizarre obligation or something. I mean, because she felt that it was the thing to do somehow, but she clearly was not emotionally invested in this at all. What I thought was interesting was how the breakup played out, because they've been playing him as being this completely nice guy,
right?
And then he suddenly turned just brutal when she turned him down.
Right. Well, his feelings were hurt, so he got
his
really
feelings
mean.
Were hurt, but he got really ugly, genuinely ugly.
Yeah. And well, she recognized that's what he was doing too, so I appreciated that she was like, "Yeah, don't." She kind of like let all the evil stuff he said kind of blow over her because she knew he really didn't mean it, and she was just like, "Yeah, I'm sorry." So I thought that was a good moment. Mm-hmm. But all right, so thumbs up for House of Lies. Good after good finale. Actually, really good season. And let's move on to Castle.
Oh, it was the
they're
hunk,
all kind of bleeding
the hunk. I never leave, but it was the hunk from overseas.
Oh,
He was kind of hot.
I was like, yeah, Castle who? Like,
yeah, that's kind of what I thought too. I'm like, well, this is a nice diversion. Usually when they bring someone in as like the competition, like they did a couple times already.
Right.
It was like, I'd sit there and I'd roll my eyes to myself and go, oh, please. I could see it a million miles away. But this one, when he walked in, I was like, yeah, I'd be like, get out of the way, author guy. I'm going for him too. but I liked this episode mostly because... It definitely focused on the fact that, you know, we actually looked at it more from her perspective than his this time,
right.
Which we usually
Castle,
do.
Castle was barely in the episode.
Really
it was weird.
Right,
yeah.
And you notice that because really the focus has been the last couple episodes leading up to it were, you know, hey, what's up? You know, I can't believe she remembered what I told her, you know, after she got shot, and she said she didn't. So she knows that I declared my love for her, but she's ignoring it. So suddenly he's feeling like, okay, I feel like a heel, you know, like
so
a total tool.
So this episode was all overcompensating. But so what was interesting was the girls' night where Kate and Morglady were basically having their whole girls' night and discussing what she should do. And they were like, totally tell him. I can't tell him. Totally tell him. And then she's like, okay, I'm going to tell him right now. And then he shows up with a blonde bimbo in the car. And she's like, well, maybe not now. That might not be the right time.
So that was the contrivance point, I think, in the story was that, you know, it's like, oh, suddenly there was this blonde bimbo in the fancy car and he was going after
it. His whole thing is he's overcompensating.
Exactly.
Oh, way overcompensating.
Totally overcompensating.
He never shows up in that car. Like, it was just ridiculous.
But one of the things that was said during the episode that called out again to me to maybe be a little bit of a contrivance is how, and they've done this before in films, and it drives me crazy, or in TV shows where, you know, it's hunky guy that she's talking to, and, you know, she leaves the morgue or something, and he's still, you know, overcome because it was his friend, you know, who's dead, and she walks over, and she's like, oh, yeah, you know, I totally know how it feels. And then, you know, he says something about, you know, people changing, and you know, oh, people don't really change. You know, it's like they really don't change. So she's thinking, oh, Castle and all his bimbo girls. Yeah, I guess he doesn't change. I'm thinking, really, you meet this guy, you've known him for like a couple days or something, and suddenly his opinion counts. You know, and so everything you know from Castle from working with him for years is out the window. You know, and
She doesn't really take his opinion. It's more of her own insecurities that
it's
he's
her excuse.
Just.
She can use that as an excuse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But she actually decides not to use it as an excuse, and she still does. She still does have like this moment where she's thinking about talking to him.
Right.
And then she doesn't. And then everybody goes their own ways.
Right. The thing is, she's technically not an insecure woman. I mean, they've kind of presented her as kind of,
she is when it comes to Castle, I think. It's weird. Okay. They're both very confident people, except with each other.
That's
so
true.
So like, she's afraid that this will screw up her friendship because she's closer to him than anybody else. But the thing is, my point is, already screwed up your friendship because he's obviously already pulling back.
Exactly.
And bonus points, next week we get Adam Baldwin as his partner for next week, which I was just like, you've got to be kidding
me.
That would be insane, yes. That's gonna be awesome.
So overall, I would say this: I liked the episode enough, especially because Hunky was in it. But we'll see what that does for the next step in the relationship that they're trying to get.
Next up, we're going to talk about Justified. And this is the penultimate, because next week's the finale, is that right? Anyway, so this is bringing us all towards the end. So what was great about this episode is all the bad guys, everything was coming together, and it was... I think, how long did it take Quarles to escape? Like 5 minutes? That was awesome.
And we're getting to the point where we really see whose motivation is for what.
But I like the fact that last week, when Davies was like, well, you should totally kill Quarles. You shouldn't try to get the, you know, reward. That's a bad idea. And so they keep him locked up. It takes him 5 minutes to escape. But the thing that's a trip is I kind of feel like Quarles knows he's at the end of his line. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows this is all coming to an end, and he's trying to leave it really, really high. So he's taking a whole lot of drugs, but he's still killing everybody, you know? Like, I like that scene at the end where it looks like Quarles is about to... Because he gets blown up, and he's on fire, and he's rolling around, and I was like, oh, no! And then the cop gets him. I was like, they're going to arrest Quarles? Like, I figured he wasn't going to go out like that. And no, he kills the cop. So now everybody wants Quarles dead. It used to be everybody wanted Bennett dead. And now everybody wants Quarles dead. But I like Quarles.
I like Quarles in a kimono.
Oh, right. Because I was like, what? Right. When the hookers had him prisoner and they were smoking weed. They were smoking out of a gun. Out of a shotgun, no less. That was just
really weird.
That was really weird, but it was awesome. So yeah, it's really good episode. And Limehouse got revealed as setting everybody up, but he now looks like he has to give up that $3 million, or the cops are going to come down on him. And he really doesn't want the cops in his area, so he might have to give that money up.
Yeah, and Boyd telling Arlo that he was going to do the bank job without him.
Oh, yeah, Arlo has totally lost his mind. Like, his whole thing is he's actually having, I don't know if it's Alzheimer's, but he's seeing dead people. So,
dead people.
Yeah, he's seeing his dead wife telling him to do stuff. And he's locking people up and taking guns and going off to do crazy stuff. I was like, what the heck is going on with Arlo? So that's thumbs up for Justified.
Yes.
Next up, we have another brand new episode of Community in the way of a PBS historical episode of the Civil War, actually.
And we continue with the blankets versus the pillows.
Right, but I mean, it's almost exactly like a documentary that you would watch on either the History Channel or PBS or whatever about Absolutely. The Civil War.
Yep.
Like, almost frame for frame.
And that's why they did it that way, which I thought was brilliant. I don't know if other people... You know, the show, as I'm watching the show, I swear like three times during the whole 22 minutes, if you take out the commercials, I said to myself, oh my God, I love this show so much because it's just so odd. You know, the way they present it, the everything about it and the characters obviously and everything. But then I also thought, now I know, but then I also know why a lot of people don't get it and why it isn't as popular as it, because it's not your standard three wall, you know,
right.
You know, comedy like 30 Rock or something, you know, where it's Community just doesn't give a crap and there's no rule book. It's like, you want to try something? Let's do it this way, you know, and run it through as a documentary.
Sorry, but...
No, go ahead.
Yeah.
There is no school in it. Like, that's only the setting. That's only the backdrop. And I think that people that turn it on for the first time expecting to see a bunch of students sitting in class and saying funny things are going to be, I guess, disappointed.
Yeah. And confused.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Confused is a good word.
Well, what was great is I actually, because I have my family visiting, and they're like, well, why do you get to control the television? And I'm like, because I have a podcast and I must watch everything. So they ended up, we ended up watching that together, and we ended up watching some shows they've never watched before.
Really?
And they ended up watching Community with me, and they loved it.
Oh,
like,
good.
They were so surprised. They were like, what is this show? And
awesome.
They were like, what's it about?
Oh, good.
But,
good.
Well, my dad's a history buff, and he watches nothing but the History Channel, so he thought it was amazing.
Just because of the presentation.
Just
because
that particular episode, he thought it was amazing.
And I think the running, kind of the running jokes through it were awesome, especially my favorite was Britta as the photographer. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
That was
great. It was like, this historical moment would have been captured if only for Britta.
Yeah, it's like, not everything in black and white is good, and then the fact that the best photo at the end was one because it was she was trying to get something else.
Yeah, she's trying to
get it.
Yeah.
So it was like it completely throughout the whole thing like paced itself as like a joke with a punchline of its own.
Right.
And so I loved it. And it was as typical Community, funny as it was, it actually had its usual heart, you know. So that, you know, when there was that email or the text exchange, or I think it was the email exchange that you know, where there was the interception where I think it was Troy that got the intercepted email
from Hobbit.
And it was, and then they go back and forth, and it's like, well, you're not supposed to, you know, you're not supposed to feel these things. And the other one, he's like, yeah, you're not supposed to write these things. And he's like, well, you're not supposed to feel these things, you know. And it was like, oh, a little teardrop, you know.
And I like the imaginary hats of friendship.
Yes,
that was pretty
exactly.
good. Yeah. And they were like, you left him in the dean's office.
I didn't see that coming, but I should have. And the fact that they show at the end that he actually went in and
got
like,
them.
Them up and shake them off. I'm like, oh, Jeff, you have a heart. It's awesome. So I think they played everything well. And Annie, you know, who I'm not usually a fan of course, if Peter was here, he'd be like all over that. But I thought they did fine with her. She was perfect for like her little nurse bit, you know, and the whole thing.
Yeah, with the Gatorade.
Yes. And a lip roller for the pillows. Oh my God. So overall, I think they just compacted and put everything in it. And great pacing, everything. I thought it was fun. I loved it.
Yes. All right. Thumbs up, community. Next up is 30 Rock. And this episode was
the employee reviews.
Oh, right. I have to say, some of the employee reviews were quite hysterical. All the stuff that they did with the white backdrop were pretty funny.
Yep.
However, I'm not sure I needed to see, what's her name? I almost want to say Britta, but it's not.
The other blonde, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. She was going through the trash.
Yeah.
And her whole going through the trash thing just was, meh. Yeah. And her trying to do something. Like, all... The thing about 30 Rock, as I've always said, if it's Liz Lemon and Jack locked in a room together, the episode is awesome.
Yeah.
When you split them up and have them doing their own storyline, I'm usually like, yeah.
Yeah.
And this one, though, I do have to say, Liz Lemon using Afro Sheen, and so then Tracy thinks that she's his father. That's pretty good.
That was good.
That was pretty good. She's like, Dad, Liz Daddy.
Oh, yeah, LL Dad Liz.
LL Dad.
Yes, yeah. LL Dad.
That was pretty good. I have to say that. I was surprised at how funny I thought that was.
And can I just say, as an observation, too, this episode was extremely amusing to me just by the nature of the content. Because every year, just last month in February, by the end of March, so like 3 weeks ago at work, I was just going, I've got too much work to do, and yet I have to fill out these stupid performance evaluations. And literally, what Jack was going through was what I had to go through. So I'm like, this is awesome, because obviously the people who work on the show work for a big company, NBC and everyone else, and the production companies, and probably have to go through this corporate stuff every year too. And I laughed. I'm like, someone wrote this based on experience.
Yes.
Because what Jack was saying was totally true.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
So funny. So funny.
All right, so wrapping that up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Thumbs up.
Yep.
Next up is Big Bang, and this was the Stephen Hawking episode, which I have to say the things that they had Sheldon do were pretty good.
They were
pretty good. Though I kind of missed the girls this week. I just realized
that. Yes, you're right. They really weren't. The only one that was in it was, what's her name? Howard's
Bernadette.
Bernadette, thank you. For the most part, she was the only one. Penny was in the laundry room with Sheldon.
Right, for briefly. 5 seconds.
Yes. But I thought I wasn't sure if I would like this or not, but I loved it because Sheldon totally loves Stephen Hawking, apparently.
And thinks that he's the only one equal to his intellect.
Exactly. So I like the fact that Howard and, you know, the others, because again, the comedy can sometimes overtake the expected humanity of the characters. But if you do that too often, then you lose that connection with them. So I like the fact that when Sheldon went to Howard's lab to talk to him about it, you know, and say, okay, what do you want me to do? You know, whatever. And Howard was just, he came in, the first time he came in and basically was still talking down to Howard, comparing him to what?
A monkey?
Monkeys, I think, was like the, that was the
no,
nice
it was
one.
Dogs
first.
Was the first one.
Then
monkey.
Monkeys.
Then he said, what about dolphins?
And the fact that Howard's, there was like no comedy from Howard's perspective. You know, it's like the comedy was built into what Sheldon was saying and his usual cluelessness is.
Right.
But the fact that Howard, like, reacted, I was waiting for, like, that little bit of comedy or humor. But he really didn't. He acted like a normal person would have.
Well, because he's insulted.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, just, you know what? There's a line to be drawn and just get the hell out. And I thought, that was good. Because then that shows that everything he did after that to Sheldon was worth it.
That Sheldon still can't give Howard a true compliment.
No, he really can't.
No.
He can't give very many people compliments.
No.
He can give himself a compliment, and
that's about it.
Yeah. But
they made him out to be more of a bully or a jerk than a, you know, socially clueless lately.
In a way.
But it's the
arrogance, though.
Yeah, it's the arrogance. Yeah. And he's kind of always been like that. He's all... What I never understood is, like, I don't even understand why they're still friends with him. Like, that boggles my mind.
I'm guessing it's just because he'll play the games and do the usual comic book stuff with them, and that may be the only reason.
Yeah, I personally I wouldn't hang out with him, but I like watching him. Yeah. Watching him do that to others is fairly amusing.
Yeah.
All right. And the last thing was Stephen Hawking was in the episode, and Sheldon had a math error. That was awesome.
And the best catchphrase at the end. Oh, another fainter.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty good.
Well played, Stephen Hawking.
Yes. So next up, I want to talk about the pilot of a new show called Scandal. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how well it did in the ratings. I don't know if anybody else watched it.
Check.
If you guys listen to my Twitter feed, I actually tweeted, which I don't do that often, about it. And the premise, really quick, is that there's this kind of DC insider. She's a lawyer, and she used to work for the White House, for the president, the chief of staff, and she was part of their whole inner core group. And whenever they had a problem, she was kind of a fixer. She would figure out a way to deal with the press and spin stuff and get stuff to go the way they want. But she just decided to quit the White House. And at first, they don't tell you why. And she starts her own firm, but it's not a firm. It's a bunch of lawyers that she's gotten together that help people. And she picks the people, and she doesn't represent them in a lawyer's perspective, but she helps them figure out what they need to do to help themselves. So the first, and it's usually kind of really high profile stuff.
Okay.
So just like somebody off the street wouldn't come to her. It has to be somebody that's really kind of famous, that needs something spun in a certain way, and there's going to be a lot of press dealing with their case. So the first case is there's a Iraqi war veteran. He's the first guy since the Vietnam War to get this Medal of Honor or whatever. And he shows up all bloody, and he says, "The police are going to think that I killed my girlfriend."
Oh, okay.
And so they're like, "All righty then." So they stick him in a room. They try to figure out the case, what's going on. And that kind of stuff, I was like, eh, because for a minute it felt a little like a crime show, because they're like going to the scene of the crime, and they're asking people questions. I'm like, I don't know if I like that part. But that was literally like 5 minutes.
Okay.
But what was interesting is something else is going on in the White House, and the chief of staff asks the main chick to come in. Oh, I forgot what the thing that drew me in, I totally forgot about this. Which is the opening scene in Scandal. If you watch nothing else, watch the first like 5 minutes. It was awesome. The script was almost like a Aaron Sorkin script. Like the dialogue was so fast and so smart and so sharp that I was just like, what the heck? And I was just blown away, because it's basically we're seeing everything through the eyes of a new lawyer that they're just hiring. So that's how they get away with doing some of the exposition.
Kind of the setup. Okay.
Is through the new person. But we leave the new person behind when the main character goes to the White House, and you find out that the president's being accused, it's very Monica Lewinsky, the president's being accused of sleeping with some chick, and so she goes and threatens the crap out of this woman. Like, it's like, whoa. It's pretty intimidating. And I was
like your life will be destroyed.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And then I was like, she's the good guy? Like, what? But the rest of it, thumbs up. You should watch. I'm sorry for rambling so long. Okay, next up, let's talk about Person of Interest.
Well, I thought this was a really good episode of the show, and it sort of tied in a lot of different things, brought back Elias, who normally is not my favorite character, although I love the actor who's playing him, but they haven't really done a whole lot with him that's really fascinated me a lot, and this time I think they used him very well. And they also brought... they actually went in and talked about his history. They showed his history a little bit, so they kind of filled you in on exactly why he's so pissed off at his dad, which seems kind of reasonable now. And I think they had all the characters, all the various working parts of the show working together really well, which normally they don't. I think a lot of times various characters, supporting characters, kind of get short shrift. They kind of like put Fusco on the shelf this week, or you know, one person gets set aside as we deal with this thing. And this time, everybody was working together,
right,
which is unusual. And I thought that was really nice. So I thought it was a good episode. I mean, you know, they had Elias trying to take over the mob, and in his own special way by killing everybody. It was kind of interesting that, you know, they had to actually protect the mafia, which is something one wouldn't think of them trying to do. But it was really just try to you know, prevent collateral damage. And I thought that the episode was great. They had some terrific moments. And like I said, they all came together, working together really nicely, which I wish they'd do more often. So, and the ending was spectacular. I loved the way they, because I mean, even though I kind of saw it coming a million miles away, I was waiting for the car to go boom. They still handled it really well with Elias finally getting his final revenge. I loved the look on his face behind bars. He had this almost beatific expression as he knew that he had gotten what he wanted. Ultimately, even if he had to pay for it by being in jail, he still knew that, you know, he had had the last laugh, and just he had this absolutely peaceful smile on his face.
Well, I liked how he dealt with the guys in the woods when he was younger. He was like, just because you're bigger and you have guns and everything, you think that you've won, but you have overconfidence and you don't understand the dynamics of what's about to happen right now. Like, he was explaining, it was just like, everybody, they were, there, and the thugs were like, huh? Yeah,
exactly. Huh?
Like, he's thinking one step ahead. That's exactly how he's lived his whole life. He's always mentally one step ahead of everybody.
Right.
And so even though they put him in jail, he's still one step ahead. He's still thinking ahead and doing exactly what he planned to do.
Right.
One thing that people don't really talk about too much is the music and the incidentals that make the show. And I thought that the music that goes along with it just really matches the mood perfectly.
I didn't even notice that.
Especially at the end.
Yeah, it's a very good episode. I mean, though what was funny was normally Person of Interest episodes are standalones. And like I said, my family was watching with me. And they were watching this episode like, we don't understand what's happening right now. And I was like, yes, that's Elias. And yes, and those are flashbacks. And I was trying to explain stuff. And normally you don't have to do that with a Person of Interest episode. But it was pretty good. And because everything kind of came together, you got rewarded for watching all these weeks. And it all came together in this episode.
So was this the season finale though? Not even?
No.
Wow. So where are they going to go next?
I don't know. Well, I think we're probably going to find out more about the two main characters. We know their names, neither one of their names are their real names.
Right.
Right.
And neither one of them are who they really say they are. So what? And Finch has got this limp. I want to know where he got that limp from. Like, that's
my thing.
Yeah, they
haven't approached that yet.
Right. So anyway, those are the things I think they're going to talk about. Okay. All right, let's talk about Awake. And this was the episode where he was seeing penguins, which was bizarre.
I thought that was great. Every time they cut away to Jason Isaacs' expression, looking at the penguin, that was gold. I mean, just this look on his face of like, you're not really there, and I don't really see you.
Kind of like a penguin.
If I just pretend like I don't see you, you'll go away, won't you?
And the penguin was like telling him stuff. It was so weird. It was so weird. But
it was great.
But then what was great was at the end of the episode, you find out that his psychiatrist that was helping him in the bank wasn't really there. That was awesome.
Sudden realization of like, you weren't there either. I was hallucinating you too.
And so they're kind of like, have you been seeing hallucinations? Nope, haven't seen anything.
Not you.
No hallucinations for me. I was like, you. And when they were describing at the beginning of the episode, they give you all the warning signs of what a schizophrenic is. Like, he fit every single warning sign. Like, that was crazy.
Check boxes.
Yeah. But that was an intense episode because as a viewer, you knew that him not getting any sleep and all these and these two universes that are existing at the same time, him trying to keep track of what's real in whichever different universe, it was going to come to a head. And that's pretty much what this episode was. It's like everything's kind of falling apart.
Yeah, he's starting to break down and emotionally and the realities of the two areas are starting to break.
And blur,
and
right.
I really, this was one episode where, I mean, you know, I've said before that there, it's like, oh, please get on with it, do something. It's because I'm starting to get bored. And this is one episode where it felt like they were listening to me because this was actually starting to get to the heart of it and where it was starting to really delve into the psychology of what's going on with him. And I really liked this episode a lot.
Yeah, it was really good. So, yeah, thumbs up. And though the thing with his son and his girlfriend sleeping upstairs, isn't his son like 15? And having a sleepover with the girl, like, really? I was actually surprised.
Well, she has a really progressive family, she says.
I understand that, but I'm actually surprised that NBC let that slide. Like,
yeah. It is a 10 o'clock show, but
still. And they've established that he's 15.
Yeah. The one thing that still bugs me, though, is, like, if we're supposed to... I mean, I realize that it's not established, this is a dream world, this is not a dream world, but still, if either of these are supposed to be dream worlds, why do we keep seeing scenes that he's not a part of?
Right.
Because you can't have a dream world and have scenes that, you know, you're not in. That the dreamer is not in.
Right.
And the thing is, we've seen that in both worlds.
Right. And well, we know, like I said, we're pretty sure that it's not a dream. We just don't know what it is, but... That does kind of,
you know, annoy me, because it's like, but wait a minute, if one of them is supposed to be a dream world, or we're at least we're supposed to be led in that direction, you know, what about?
Right.
So, yeah, that does annoy me.
All right, so... But still, super thumbs up for Awake. This week's episode was really good. All right, next up, we're going to talk about Grimm.
Yes, we are.
Susie has been waiting to talk about Grimm since she joined the podcast.
Her watch.
I'll let you kick it off. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I loved this episode. I didn't know for sure what... I try and avoid the spoilers if I can for these, like the teasers and stuff, so I did this time. But I knew that as usual, Nick was going to find himself, you know, I knew they were taking the kind of the vacation away, that he and Juliet were going to take their time away. So here's the weird thing. I give it thumbs up, but mostly for the Nick storyline, maybe not as much for the Hank, just because of where they're going with that.
Was stupid.
Thank you. I was trying to be nice about that, but yeah, I agree.
It was dumb.
Okay, so good. We've established that. So, but for the Nick storyline, I loved it just because I do love him as a character. I like the fact that they're trying to get him more grimmed, if you will. And so he's getting balls in that area. He doesn't freak out anymore when he finds the beasts, but he does, you know, he kind of reacts and tries to remember. You can see him kind of almost trying to remember what it looks like, you know, the first time he sees one. So he can usually do his dial-a-buddy and get to
I have to say the dial-a-buddy thing worked a lot better, because now we have two people on his Rolodex with different skills.
Exactly.
So I like he's having a Grimm team.
He does. And I love her. Yeah. The new addition. She's good. She's adorable. I love her. Yeah. And she's perfect with Silas. So I think they're great together. She and Monroe are great. So I'm liking that part of it. And so the story, just the way it paced, I have not been a huge fan of Juliet up to now, just because she hasn't really done that much. But if I do go back and look at previous episodes mentally, she's never been the stupid girlfriend.
No.
You know, which I really appreciate, because...
The only thing I say that they did stupid was there was no reason for them to split up.
Well, but there was. That's the thing. In this case, I think there was.
I didn't think
so. Because if you think about it, it's what she said which makes perfect sense, because... You know, Bird Chick ran away in this episode.
Well, why didn't they both just run after together?
Because it's exactly what she said. He started to go, and she's like, she took her gun out, and she's like, because he's on the chase, so he can't do anything. The two guys are after him, and so she takes her phone and the gun and basically says, I'm going to go the other way and call the state troopers. So that was what she, and I thought, that's the smart girl. That's what you do. You go get away from the noise and the action. You call the state troopers, because she doesn't know what's going to happen with Nick. He could get shot and he needs medical help or whatever. So she did the smart thing by not being professional in what she does. She's not trying to do his job. So I appreciate the fact that instead of just sitting there and trying to hide in the house, you know, she actually did something smart and said, I'm going to go over here and call the state troopers. But she took her gun to be able to, you know, to keep herself safe.
Right.
Now, of course, they played into that and had her, after I'm assuming calling the state troopers, go and find him, and therefore she kind of rescues him a bit, you know, if you will. And I was like, well, they put that in as a trope, so that's fine. But what I liked is, if I think back to other episodes with her, when she flashed back, even I think to the, you
all know, the different the things that have happened.
Yeah, yeah. And in the break-in, you know, when you know, he had the monster that starts with an S, I forget, the troll, basically. When he came in, and she, in the house, that whole scene in the house where Nick was getting attacked, it's true. She didn't, like, scream and go, oh, my God, now what? He's like...
Well,
you know,
yeah, yeah. Only thing is, he does a big proposal, and her thing is, you're obviously lying to me about something, and we're not going to get married until you open up and tell me what's going on. Because she knows he's hiding something.
She does.
And I actually think, instead of getting his feelings hurt and stomping off like, oh, she won't marry me and be sad, dude, just freaking tell her what's going on. At this point, Your choices are, you tell her what's going on, or she's going to leave you. I mean, those are your choices. And, like you said, she's not stupid.
She's not stupid.
And he's already got a whole team of other people who are helping her.
Who are helping him, yes. But so, I think part of it, though, because I actually, I'm not a very romantic person, so the whole marriage thing that happens in every show all the time doesn't
Well, I'm not saying that she should get married, but I think he should just tell her.
No, true. But I like the way they handled this proposal, because I'm sitting here watching it going, okay, oh, you know, she's just lying there, and he comes over and hands her the ring. And I'm thinking, my thought is, will she or won't she? Will she? And I'm like, I'm trying to gauge myself.
I could tell by the look on her face like, that yes she wasn't going to.
But you never know, because I'm not sure what the writers want to throw in our face and force feed us. So my thought was, how will I react one way or the other? And I was like, I actually think I would be kind of pissed if she said yes. Like, I'd be mad at the writers. So when she said no, I was happy. And I loved his reaction. I know it sounds like he's whiny, but he thinks he's got it under control and it's okay. So for him, he's like, why wouldn't she? You know, it's like, we've been together all this time. I think that's what she wants.
Except that she actually told him the last time she got kidnapped explicitly told him that this is a problem.
Well, they did, but then the weird thing is, and I noticed that too, and I thought about that, but the next episode, everything was fine again. So I'm like, oh, maybe they talked about it. I guess we're supposed to believe they washed over that.
No.
But I liked it. I thought it was a good episode.
Yeah, it was all right.
Fair enough.
All right, next up, let's talk about Fringe.
I loved the episode. I thought it was great. First of all, we haven't been over there for a little while.
Yes.
And I always loved doing that. And it was a 2 Lincoln episode.
I know, right? Bonus points.
And we won't be getting that again.
Yeah, sad face.
Unfortunately. But hey, you know, the more Lincolns, the better. So I really enjoyed this app. The whole thing with the shapeshifters was, you know, it was a shapeshifter episode. I mean, it was basically just an excuse to get the to get Lincoln over so he could interact with the group from over there. Mm-hmm. Which
and our Olivia, because basically the way they're compensating now, I see where this is going, which is Olivia is now with Peter, and we left Lincoln without a love, so they throw him to the other unit. Because I pretty much think he's going to volunteer to stay on the
of
other
course.
Side. Because now...
I think that was the reason for, unfortunately, getting rid of, you know, the original Lincoln.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, because I really like the original
Lincoln.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I like that Lincoln better than the other ones, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean that's the Lincoln who they decided not to kill by, you know, burning up. So, I mean, he was cool enough to decide, you know what, we're not going to kill him after all. And and they went through all that trouble and built him up as a character, and we really got to know him well, and then suddenly he gets offed in favor of Lincoln too. And so I was kind of pissed off about that, actually. I've gotten to like Lincoln too. He's cute and nerdy and sweet and all of that, but I didn't want, you know, our first Lincoln thrown to the dogs for that.
Right.
So I was kind of upset.
But did you see that coming? Because
I
totally did. The whole, I mean, obviously being a Lincoln times 2 episode, you knew something was up. So I didn't know which Lincoln was going to die.
I knew one of them was going to die, but I wasn't sure which one.
It was a matter of which
one. I had the feeling it was going to be the first Lincoln, because, you know, they've been building up, you know, oh, poor lonely little Lincoln, you know, and how he doesn't have any love and on all that for a while now. And I just had this feeling, oh, no. Oh, don't go there. Oh, damn.
I know.
Well, as soon as he got shot, it's like,
yes.
I'm going to live. No.
No, you're not. Exactly.
It was
fun
seeing him and his doppelganger, you know, sit together and cross-reference each other's lives.
Yeah.
And they had their girly moment where they're on the phone. It's like, did this happen to you? Well, how about this? And I was like, get off the radio. And then Olivia was like, get off the radio, girls. And I was like, yes, all right.
We're trying to work here.
Well, the thing that I'm thinking is weird, though, because I love that for that part of it, but I am still kind of trying to figure out what the hell's going on with Captain Broyles.
Well, he's a shapeshifter.
He is a shapeshifter, and that's why he was not keen on them, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. And as soon as they got into the
Massive Dynamics
headquarters, as soon as they got into Massive Dynamics and they were taking a look at that map, I thought, oh, that's just going to lead them right to Broyles.
Which will be good, because Lincoln's last dying words was, who gave up our location.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Well,
yeah, really surprised, actually, that the final scene was not them coming right to Broyles, you know, and arresting him, because there they are.
That's what Astrid.
That's what I was going to say.
Astrid figured it out.
I thought she was going she wouldn't have the sense to just keep that to herself. She'd say something. But I think what she actually went to tell Broyles about Lincoln. Was Lincoln's death.
I agree. And you know the reason? Because I thought exactly the same thing as Libya when she walked into the office and mm-hmm. he's like, yeah, I already know, blah, blah, blah. And then she still stayed and like was twitching her little finger, like thinking hard. My thought was, oh, you know, is she going to actually approach him and say, hey, by the way, I've been monitoring these strange calls or like right. you know, something like that.
If anyone's going to figure it out, it's going to be her.
But it's going to be her, and she's not going to have the sense to not tell Broyles himself.
Right.
But that went through my head. But then I realized, oh no, she's just told him about Lincoln.
Lincoln, exactly. Because you know what, my thought is, I actually am trying to give her more credit or benefit of the doubt that she would have enough sense not to tell Broyles. I think she would be nervous or concerned enough that she. I think she trusts Olivia and our four lost Lincoln now at this point, I think she trusts them enough now that she would probably approach them.
Right.
Because if she suspected Broyles, you know, she would be really worried about, you know, the hierarchy or chain of command, but she would also be like, she would recognize the fact that that wasn't normal. And so I think that would have been okay. So when she didn't say anything to him and they cut away and then we found out that Lincoln died, I was like, okay, that's what she was going to go tell him.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, thank God, okay.
Yeah, because I was like, don't do it, he's going to kill
exactly.
you.
That's exactly my thought, too. So I'm like, but I really like the scene, at the end, Lincoln is, our agent Lincoln, you know, he's like, oh, he's going to leave, but then, you know, he's like, well, do you want me to stay? You know, and she's
she
like,
says,
yeah.
Yes.
And I was
like,
oh, I know, me too. I was like, there's that.
I thought
home.
It was very telling that he was more teary eyed than she
yes.
was.
Right.
Oh, he was, I almost cried when he cried. He was cute. So, yeah, I agree. I thought it was overall just well done.
He just wants an Olivia. I don't think he cares which one.
Well, he wants
red-haired, blonde-haired. Yeah. Just an Olivia.
Yes, give me an Olivia and I'll be happy.
But on a bigger picture, he just wants a home, a place to belong, you know, and to be meaningful, if you will. So
right.
It was good. I liked it.
And he is kind of right, because with Peter back, Olivia doesn't really need him.
She doesn't remember.
Yeah. Well, she's not,
you know?
She is no longer his Olivia.
Exactly.
She has changed that much. She's a different person.
Yep.
Right. Aw. Sad again. All right. Yeah. Thumbs up for Friends. This is an awesome episode. It's really good.
Yes, it definitely was.
All right, next up, let's talk about the season premiere of Magic City.
Yay.
And the best thing it has going for it is it's starring...
I was just
going
to ask, who's in that?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
That's it. Okay.
Yes, that is pretty much what it has going for it, actually.
Okay.
I have to say his two sons are pretty. and I like the older son. I do like him.
Mm-hmm.
And the mystery of it is kind of interesting, but... I don't know, man. If Jeffrey Dean Morgan was not in this show, I probably would not be watching the next episode.
Really? I thought it was interesting.
But
it
was interesting, but I didn't know if it was interesting enough for me to keep watching. But after it was over, I was kind of like, I kind of want to see more Jeffrey Dean Morgan. All right. And I like, he's really good. Like, he is really good in it. And so I'm definitely going to keep... I don't know how I have episode 2 and 3. How is that possible?
I know, I saw that. I was like, really?
Yeah, I have 2 and 3. I'm not sure how that's possible, but we'll talk about that next week, I guess. But yeah, I really did. I liked him a lot. I felt some of the stuff was very predictable, old mobster stuff. Like, it's like, oh, we're pulling this move. And with the son sleeping with the head mobster's girlfriend... /wife.
That I saw coming.
Yeah, I was like, really? And the fact that he continually kills his wives, mysteriously they die in childbirth, like, okay. And it also was slightly disturbing that the son looked like he wanted to make out with his dad's wife. Like, I was like, dude,
that was uncomfortable.
I was like, that's a bad move. That's a bad move, man. I was like, sleeping with the mobster's wife is probably a better move than sleeping with your dad's wife. But, I mean, his dad's new wife is hot. It wasn't like she's... Because apparently something happened to their mom, recently, and he met this woman. And
yeah,
he
she died of something.
We don't know. They haven't said what it is yet, but
presumably not childbirth.
Yes, because he's got three kids with his first wife, and then something happened to her, and now he found this really young woman, and she's maybe 25, and his sons are like 20. So I could see the conflict there, but it was like there was this moment where the stepmom was like sunbathing naked, and the son came looking for his dad, and he just stared at her out the window for like 5 minutes before he knocks on the window and lets her know that he's there. Yeah. And I was like, that's not creepy at all, dude. But the whole mobster owning the hotel, the union, putting people at the bottom of the lake, like, at first I was like, man, if this union thing is a whole thing, that's going to be boring. But it's not. I think the objective is he has to figure out how to get himself out from under the mob. Like, he's gotten himself more and more indebted to the mob, and he has to figure out a way out, and nobody knows but him how deep he's in. So I see that, and that's kind of interesting. But it's a pilot. It's good enough. It's like this. Pilots are tricky. I think it's good enough for me to give it another episode. Like, it's not awful or anything. I'm totally going to watch another episode. I really like him in it. He's strong. I think the actor playing his oldest son is pretty good, too. So, and I like the time period's kind of interesting. So, yeah, I'm definitely, watch another one.
Yeah. See, I think pilots, like you said, can be tricky. And I think that just because it didn't necessarily blow me away, it also didn't put me off.
No.
I thought that there was enough going for it that I'm interested and I want to keep coming back. I thought it was beautifully shot. It's certainly gorgeous eye candy. It's beautiful to look at. And I think that there's enough going for it that, it has a lot of potential. I've watched pilots that were a whole lot slower than this, and they eventually developed into really must-see viewing shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so this had enough going for it that I definitely am intrigued enough that I want to keep coming back. I mean, it had some imagery that really, really grabbed me. His dreams of the lake filled with bodies.
Right, right.
And, notably that, it had the union guy added to the pack at the end. It has moments like that.
And to be fair, he totally warned the guy. He was like, look, he's like, don't push me.
You know what happened.
And he goes, what happens to my enemies. And he's like, oh, I'll do what I have to do. I was like, dude, do you not understand the part about what happens to my enemies? They end up at the bottom of a freaking lake. And the thing is, he should have known that because
he knows he's got mob ties.
Right.
You don't punch a guy with mob ties.
And the guy and his dad, like after the dude ends up disappearing, the dad's like, I know you killed him. And my thought is, he should have known you would kill him too. Why would he push? Like, that made no sense to me. Anyway.
The thing with the dog should have pushed him over the edge. The people have been pushed for a whole lot less who have mob ties.
Yeah, they killed his wife's dog, her poodle.
Yeah, that alone should have been enough that he should have put him in a lake.
Right.
So the fact that he even waited that long says a lot about his character. But the guy who had it coming from the beginning, I mean, I can't believe that he was dumb enough to push him like that. But there's just a lot of things about the show that are intriguing enough to me and potential for the characters to develop that, I figure I'm going to keep watching, at least for a while.
And you forgot to mention the whole Jeffrey Dean Morgan naked part at the beginning.
that was too brief.
He was like, you want more.
It's like he put on that robe way too quickly, but it was nice while it lasted. Jeffrey Dean Morgan is definitely pretty to look at.
Yes. All right. I was like, way to start off, because it's literally the beginning shot of the episode. Okay. I was like, way to start off. I like it.
Well, the good thing is,
like premium cable.
It's believable that someone like him would have a 25-year-old wife.
Right.
You know, because sometimes you get the old guys, you're like, oh, please, the money, But in this one,
For he's Jeffrey hot.
Dean, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so that's it. Let's wrap it up. If you have any feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. You can listen to us on GetThePointRadio.com, KryptonRadio.com, Stitcher.com, and Weedonopolis. And we will talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.